Hi everyone, welcome to the Third Culture Kid virtual online forum where our conversations of TCK and faith come together. This is a place for people to share their own stories and learn from others. It is a place people can safely explore the effects, benefits, and purposes with cross-cultural upbringings. We also wanted to challenge TCKs and CCKs in general to think deeper on how their cross-cultural component of their lives is tied to their faith. This podcast is brought to you by Crew, a caring community passionate about connecting people to Jesus Christ. So today our interview topic is on multi-generational minorities. With rapid growth since the 1970s in the U.S. foreign-born population, nowadays a good number of Asians, Hispanics, and Black populations are first and second generation. However, a group of people that are less often talked about are those whose grandparents, great-grandparents, or even great-great-grandparents have long called American home. Today, we will dive into the lives of these multi-generational minorities to hear and learn about their stories of growing up as a third culture kid and their stories of living in between worlds. I wanted to start off with asking if everyone could introduce themselves, where they are currently living, and what makes them a multi-generational TCK, I guess.
I guess I'll start off. So my name is Michael. I'm currently in Austin, Texas, going to school for a PhD. I consider myself African-American, Black American, and my family's been here at least four generations. So I kind of consider myself in this area because I did grow up and interact with many different cultures.
I'm Adrian Reyna Gonzalez. I currently live in Lafayette, Louisiana, a generational third culture kid because my grandparents immigrated from Mexico, some of them when they were kids, some of them when they were adults. And then my parents grew up in America, in Texas. And so I'm the third generation to have lived in America in my family. And
my name's Daniel Sasaki. I serve with Epic Movement, which is a Crew ministry up in Portland, Oregon. And so that's where I live now. But originally grew up in Los Angeles, in California. I'm a fourth generation Japanese American, meaning my great-grandparents came to the U.S. And when I think about being a multi-generational third culture kid, I think there's elements of what is Japanese culture to me, what is American culture to me, and what is that mix of Japanese-American culture, and what does that mean to me?
Yeah. And I'm Elizabeth, and I'm not multi-generational TCK, but I will be the interview for today. And I am a TCK, though, because I lived in the Philippines from ages 2 to 11 and then moved to the U.S. Currently, I am living in Phoenix, Arizona, and doing Crew as my ministry. So the first question is, how have you felt you were culturally not ethnic among first and second generations?
I'll go first if that's okay with you guys. All right. Everyone's shaking their head.
Yeah.
So for me, I definitely, there was a point when I was younger where my family said, hey, we have to teach you about our history. So that meant for me that, hey, I'm not learning about that or different in some way at that moment. And the way they explained it was, you know, that the school isn't going to teach you about your Black heritage. As my parents, they were going to come and teach me. So, yeah, that'd be the first time I really thought about it.
I think for me, when I think through this question, it's in some points difficult because when my great-grandparents came and even my grandparents, they were all in the internment or concentration camps during World War II. And so for them, they, in some sense, ditched as much of their Japanese culture as they could and tried to assimilate as fast as possible. And so for me, it's interesting in that as I've desired to learn more of my roots and my culture, it's almost been in contrast to that first and second generation, which was, let's not remember it. Let's not speak Japanese in the house. We're not going to teach that. And then for me, I'm like, oh, I want to learn about this. It kind of clashes against some of those roots and some of those things that they passed on to their kids because they wanted their kids to like be successful in America. And so there's kind of that clash in those cultures.
Daniel, I had a question because I know with my family, we can only go back to so far, like slavery is kind of cut off a bit of our African heritage. Are your older generations in your family able to answer some of those questions? Are they like, hey, well, we can't answer them. There's like a loss of information.
Yeah. So my family was, I guess, in some sense, fortunate that a lot of the stories were passed down. So for example, my grandfather served in the 442nd, for those that are aware what that is. And he was willing to talk about some of his service. Some of my family, extended family, like they've shared their stories with their kids of what it was like to grow up in the camps. Mm-hmm. They had talked to their parents about some of the culture things. And there's actually documents and physical artifacts that we still had that my family was fortunate to still have. But I know a lot of other Japanese American families that when they were put into the camps and things, they lost a lot of that, or those generations weren't willing to talk about those stories. So for me personally, I have some of those stories, but I also know and have a lot of friends that are third, fourth generation Japanese American, where those stories are lost as those generations have passed.
Thank you.
For me, actually not ethnic enough amongst the first and second generation, first generations. I think the thing that strikes me the most is probably language. I think about my grandparents all speak Spanish, my parents speak Spanish, but there's this kind of disconnect when it came to me. And so they didn't want to teach me Spanish. We actually haven't talked about it that much, but I just know culturally, for even my parents and for other people in the Latino community, they didn't really want to teach their children Spanish because they felt that it just didn't have a lot of use in the American culture. There wasn't going to be a necessity to know Spanish, which is kind of lost on me now because now I'm in Texas where a lot of people speak Spanish. And so, or when I go back home and see my family, where it's kind of necessary in some ways. And I'm even on summer mission in Miami right now working and everyone speaks Spanish here. And so I was like, dang, missed opportunity. Yeah, I think language has a lot to do with me not feeling not ethnic enough. I think about just the nuances of language and jokes and context that comes with talking to your family in their heart and home language, you know, is kind of lost on me sometimes. And they'll have to explain it and then it's not funny anymore. And I'm like, well, I'm sorry. Which is weird because I shouldn't have to apologize for not understanding, but also it's just reality. And then I think about even culturally not understanding references, like listening to music like Vicente Fernandez or Selena Quintanilla. I've been diving into that more recently because Selena's awesome. And if you don't know who Selena is, you should look her up. She's amazing. Diving in and like kind of reading the lyrics, I can kind of pick up on what they're saying. But as a kid, none of the music really made sense to me just because of the language. And so even the references of song lyrics or TV shows were kind of lost on me. And so in some ways I was like, well, I don't feel ethnic enough to like really hang out with y'all and understand what y'all are saying. And I was like, and it just felt kind of lost on me to be feeling super connected to either my community back home with Hispanic people and specifically my family.
Adrian, like, have you, I guess you mentioned like, you know, your relatives like not passing on that language and stuff. Is that itself ever been a centerpiece of conversation of like, oh, you guys didn't teach me this or you didn't pass this down. And yet now I'm, you know, finding all these places where I'm having to use it or I could use it.
Good question.
Yeah, I don't think I specifically had the conversation with them from my perspective. I know like my grandparents, they do the thing where they tease me because I'm the baby of the family. And so like, oh, you don't know Spanish. You should have learned Spanish. And I was like, well, you're supposed to teach me. So I feel confused. they'll tease me. And even my grandpa now will talk to me in Spanish. And I think my comprehension of Spanish has increased a lot since I was a kid. Now I can basically understand what people are saying when they're speaking Spanish. But even in Latino culture, like I'm in Miami and there's different types of Spanish here than there are than Tejano, Texas, Mexican Spanish. I haven't specifically talked to them from my perspective, but I've heard their perspective of like, oh, I should have learned. And then I'm like, well, you should have talked.
Never too late. You're still here.
Yeah, I still can't. That's true.
Yeah, my cousin, she's like half Latino and half white. And her mom never wanted to teach her Spanish because she didn't want her to feel different. But I think she's always felt frustrated with it because she's like, well, I already look different. So it's like, I might as well like act the part and learn Spanish. But that was always frustrating for her. Okay, so thank you guys for sharing. So the second question we have is, how have you felt you have been seen as different by European multi-generationals?
When I think through this question, I think the main part that hits me is something that I've had to experience, I think most of my life, both in California and then especially as I moved up into Oregon, is this question of where are you from or where are your parents from? Oftentimes there's this element of, oh, if this was asked of someone of European descent, like they might be asking, it's like, oh, I'm, you know, my relatives and ancestors have been in America. They're just like, oh, I'm from this state. But when I'm asked that, I'm like, oh, I'm from California. I'm from Torrance. Oftentimes I can sometimes see that that's not what they're asking. They're asking what my ethnicity is, what my ancestors' culture, where they immigrated from. And yet that's not the question that gets asked. And so I think sometimes just having to navigate that, like, is this person asking me, oh, where am I from? Meaning I'm from LA or I'm from Portland now, or are they asking my ethnicity and my heritage of, oh, I'm Japanese or Japanese American? And honestly, sometimes it's frustrating having to engage in that conversation and having to kind of decipher what the question that person is asking. And there's times I'll, I think, dive into it a little bit and be like, oh, are you asking my ethnicity? And try to correct them with grace, but also this truth element. But then there's other times clearly I know someone and how they're asking, and I'll just let them know, like, I'm Japanese. Or if they're asking, you're clearly not from Portland because you say blank. And it's like, oh, I'm from LA. But that's one of the differences I think I've seen.
For me, sometimes it's language. Even here in Miami, I think people just experience me in the way that I look. You know, I'm not fully white on some parts of my body, maybe, like the underside of my arm. But on the other side of my arm, it's pretty different. And so I just look different. I look kind of like some people here. And so last week, I got asked, like, oh, you look like you speak Spanish. And I'm like, ooh, that kind of hurts a little bit, you know? Because it's a sore subject for me that I'm still processing. And so I think, I don't necessarily think I walk up to European multi-generationals and ask them, oh, you look like you speak German or Swedish or something, you know? I just don't do that. That'd be kind of weird. But that was weird for me to experience in Miami, of all places. I think I've gotten that. Even since living in Lafayette, I've only lived there for a couple years, and there's not a huge Latino population there. And so I can, like, go to the grocery store and see just European multi-generationals or even in my friend group and see how, not that they're, like, distracted or disgruntled with the way that I look and knowing that I look different, you know, and maybe not knowing my ethnicity, but they sometimes don't know how to approach the conversation. So they feel like a little bit hesitant. Even at the grocery store, if I'm checking out, I can notice one person who looks majority culture walking through the checkout line, and the checkout person says, oh, hey, how are you doing? Like, such a great day. Things like that, you know, niceties. And then when I walk up and I'm like, oh, hey, how are you? And they're like, I'm good. And then that's like the end of the conversation. And so part of me can't help but think, like, oh, I look brown. There's not a lot of people here who, like, look like me in general in Lafayette, Louisiana. And so you don't know how to approach this conversation. Mm-hmm. Either because your experience is they speak a different language, or I just have never interacted. And so that might not always be the case, but that's something that's always running through my mind. Which is weird because I just spoke English with them, you know, perfectly. And so I'm like, this feels weird, you know? And so, yeah, I feel seen as just someone who's from Mexico and that's where my family's from. And although I enjoy the culture, that's not all who I am. So.
Mm-hmm. As Adrian speaks, I definitely understand that. And like an American context, like the language that I see kind of gives me away. Like, okay, you're from the States. I would say a little bit if I'm like sitting at a table and like people are introducing themselves, I find people of European descent, or oftentimes they could be an American, but they will never say they're American. It'd be like, well, I'm Italian, German, I'm French. Maybe you get a little bit more, you know, the person a little bit more, and then say, well, I'm half Italian or something, and I'm a little bit mixed with this, a little bit mixed with that. But I kind of find none of us really say, hey, oh, we're American. And when I answer the question, I end up saying, well, African-American, or I'm Black, or something like that. I would say that it's a little bit different just not being able to actually go to a country or something like that, or say it's this country or that country from my perspective. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say that's the main difference, that interpretation, especially if everyone has someone is an American, different, at least one generation American. The question is almost, as Daniel was saying, like, how you, we know this question, not asking if we're American. And so, all right, so how are we going to interpret the answer for this? And sometimes, for me, my answer signifies that I'm okay. My people have been in America for a long period of time. Going back to slavery in some way, shape, form, and yeah.
Thank you guys for answering. Yeah. So the last question we have is, how has your faith helped you live in the in-between space?
Sometimes, I guess, the racial stuff does get me upset. Mm-hmm. And I'll be lying if it didn't. I got to go to scripture. I got to remind myself. We all do come from one man, Adam. And yeah, perfect genes. Kids can come out any way they want, any way they can. And it opens my heart. And so you can call people brother and stuff like that. So it helps me be more open every day. Mm-hmm. And open when you're angry, open when you're frustrated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for being real with that answer. Even when I think about this, like there's emotions that I start to feel of what does this even look like? And I think for me, something that's been really valuable is in faith, turning and I mean, we have the New Testament, and so we see how Jesus lived his life. And it's like, you know, I'm not Jesus, I'm not perfect. Yeah. But he set an example for me of, mm-hmm. you know, he's living in in-between worlds of even this drastic one of he's fully God and fully man. Right? There's cultural differences that he's walking into. There's gender there's all these things that he's like stepping into those spaces and gives an example of like, how do you not deny yourself, but at the same time, like enter into that space and being one that's restorative. And so when I think about, oh, what does it look like to live in these in-between spaces? I think one is that it's going to be hard. There's going to be pain oftentimes as well. But there's value in standing in there. There's value in, I think, in meeting people there too. I think so that's like a second element of like, I'm not alone in this. Like, it's not like God created these things and he's like, oh, you're experiencing this. I have no idea what it is. But like Jesus experienced living in this in between. And so I think those two elements, how do I step into this knowing that there's going to be times it's going to be hard. It's going to be painful. but also remembering, like, okay, well, Jesus experienced this. And so how do I, in some sense, like, walk in his footsteps and how he engaged with the different cultures and the different people, just trying to follow him, an example like you said.
Come on, that's a good word. Wrap it up. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, that was really good. That is, like, also most of my answer is looking at Jesus, looking at the Old Testament, you know? Perfectly in this in-between space, being 100% man and 100% God, and approaching the different cultures and approaching his Jewish culture, approaching his being in this government that was oppressive. And so we see him in this weird in-between space, and that's where I see the character of Jesus, like, in me, like, he's given me that. And not that, again, like what Daniel said, like, I'm not Jesus either. So I'm not doing it perfectly. I'm not him. But he shows me how it can and how it can be done well. And I just think about how living in the in-between is really hard. And I think what comes to mind when I think about in-betweens is a picture of a bridge. And bridges are great. They get you across these great gulfs and these beautiful scenery sometimes, or maybe torrent waters or something of that nature. One thing that I've been learning through scripture and how Jesus was basically a bridge in between the divine and the human, earthly, worldly aspect. He enables me to be the same thing for culture, for the Latin America and North America, you know, the country that I live in versus the country that family comes from. And being a bridge is hurtful. I mean, bridges are meant to be walked on and carry the weight and the force of a lot. But Jesus did it perfectly and beautifully and did it sacrificially and out of full generosity. I will get frustrated and I will get upset, as in, like, inevitably so, but that I can rest in him and knowing that he's done the work. He's done the hardest work, and I can rest in the fact that he is God, and that he kind of mended this gap of brokenness. And I can see the restorative process in myself through just reading scripture and prayer and worship and so many ways to connect. He enables me to use now this kind of multi-generational place that I find myself as a Latino. And he says, nobody can use that against you. Like, you use it, because use it for me and my glory. And just this past Sunday, I got to talk to a girl here on mission who, very similar to my story, is multi-generational Latina. And she was talking to a bunch of us staff and students, ethnic minority, and said, I didn't expect to have this conversation of diving deeper into my culture. I've never talked about it. And it's been really hurtful. And she started crying. She said, thank you. I didn't know I was on mission for another reason, to just to share the gospel. And I was like, this is what I'm here for, to help people see their own dignity, you know, to see that they are Christ. They can do that for others. And so it was amazing. And yeah, looking at Christ helps me and propels me forward, because without him, I couldn't do it. I'd fall apart. So,
yeah. Adrian, when you mentioned the bridge building, it's like, oh, it takes work and it's hard. It's not just, oh, the bridge is there and
yeah,
we're great. Like, there's things that are hard. It, in my mind, I was like, oh, and there's this element. I think if I'm honest with myself, another way I think faith plays a role is, like, what does it look like to extend grace even in those hard times? In your bridge analogy, I'm like, all right, well, if I'm on this half of the river, like, that's so much work to build a bridge so that I can love and be in community with those on the other side of the river. And yet that's what God calls us to do. And it's not going to be easy. And it's like, so many times God calls us, love your neighbors, yourself, build each other up. And there's importance in community. And there's times I'm like, God, that's so much work. And it's going to be hard and painful. And it uses time and resources. And yet he's like, hey, but I need you to do this. And I'm calling you to do this. And honestly, that's probably the only motivation I have to sometimes build those bridges. Otherwise, it's so easy to just be like, I'll stay here. I'm comfortable here. And yeah, I think that's another way that the faith, or my faith, propels me to stand in there.
Yeah, two things that come to head from what you guys saw. Like, one was Jesus is saying, like, you know, the Son of Man had no place to lay his head. And just taking that with a level of honesty and literalness, like, okay, this is an in-between. This is our home, better days, the place God prepared for each and every one of us. It's a beautiful room, and a beautiful culture. This week, I was reading, I think it's The Road to Emmaus, when the two disciples, and Jesus is talking to them and explaining everything from Moses forward. And I believe they don't recognize him until he gives thanks. And then later he eats the fish to prove that he's not a ghost. And just, he doesn't really care about how you cooked it and how you made it, whether it was the best fish ever or the best bread, like, or culturally, did you put an egg wash on that bread? But, you know, you invited him in and, you know, he's going to give thanks to God. It goes across cultures. And I think that's something that all of us and our families can know and understand.
Thank you guys so much for joining us. The TCKVOF is now on 10 podcast platforms. If you want to stay connected to us and ask us questions or have a topic idea you would like to discuss in the future, you can click on the message button on Anchor to leave us a voice message. We also have a blog and an Instagram page that you all can follow. And you can do the same thing, like message us with any ideas or any thoughts. But yeah, thank you again for listening to the TCK VOF, where our conversations of TCK and faith come together. Hope you have a great rest of your week.